Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is Kansas Senator Roger Marshall, who joins us to discuss the newly released Make Our Children Healthy Again strategy. But first, here's this week's headlines. Farmers with cotton, rice, and peanut-based acreage will receive the biggest subsidy increases under the changes Congress made to Farm Bill commodity programs in budget reconciliation. The legislation enacted in July increases reference prices in the price loss coverage program and also makes enhancements to the agriculture risk coverage program. All farmers with eligible base acres will see bigger payments, according to a new analysis from the University of Missouri's Food and Agriculture Policy Research Institute. However, the average increases are estimated to vary widely, from 62% for corn, 65% for sorghum, and nearly 72% for soybeans. Cotton payments are expected to increase by 177%. With peanuts and rice each surpassing 200% payment increases. The Supreme Court has agreed to an expedited schedule for considering two cases challenging the legality of President Donald Trump's tariffs. Both cases challenge Trump's use of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act to enact sweeping retaliatory tariffs on countries around the world. Oral arguments will begin the first week of November. A federal appeals court last month upheld a May Court of International Trade decision, finding that Trump overstepped his authority in enacting tariffs on all countries. The Make America Healthy Again Commission released the long-awaited final strategy report recommending continued research on the role of pesticides and plastics play in the development of chronic disease. The Make Our Children Healthy Again strategy unveiled Tuesday also suggested easing some regulations on farms, increasing research on precision agriculture technology, and removing restrictions on whole milk sales in schools. The report is almost identical to the draft that was leaked in August, which avoids any mention of specific pesticides. The first MAHA report released in May highlighted the potential health impacts of glyphosate and atrazine. Senator Roger Marshall is a Republican representing the state of Kansas. We asked him about his major takeaways from the MAHA Commission's final report.
Well, Lydia, I'm just ecstatic to see this one. And certainly, as we see reports from our farm groups out there, they sure appear to be happy with this as well. And I hope your listeners are communicating that to you. I would just point out that over 250 groups, farm groups, ag groups, went to the White House and talked to the MAHA writers of this about what agriculture is doing, what we're doing, regenerative agriculture, how we're growing more with less. We had a big hearing here as well on soil health. Maybe we'll talk about that in a second. But there's like one page of this 20-page report that really focuses on agriculture. And I want to read just one highlight from it. I'm quoting it, empowering farmers and keeping solutions voluntary by expanding programs. So I think that we've effectively communicated to the MAHA group that we are growing more with less, that we're using less chemicals than ever, but we still need those herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers unless you want groceries to go up 10x. So I think ag did an incredible job of communicating our story to the White House. So, and thanks to AgriPulse for all you did to help get that story out as well.
And Senator, I want to talk about the Capitol Hill MAHA roundtable that you hosted earlier this summer that you mentioned. Secretary Kennedy described you as one of the best partners in the MAHA movement. You know, the focal point of that hearing was soil health and precision ag technology. You began to mention that specific part in the report. But do you think the report does enough to put focus on soil health and the role that farmers play in being a solution for so many of the things that the MAHA movement's trying to address?
Yeah, I think it's a great first step and maybe a second and third step. You know, what I've believed is that healthy soil is where agriculture meets MAHA. That if we have healthy soil, it's going to lead to healthy, nutrient-rich food. But let's not micromanage the farmers and tell them what we can't do. Let's stay focused on the goal here of healthy soil. And again, 10, 20% of farmers are embracing these modern day regenerative ag practices. I hope that more and more do. We're going to try to supply money out of the farm bill to help them with these transitions as well. So I think it's great that everyone certainly understands just the importance of healthy soil. And now we got to get there. So I think this is an incredible first step.
Senator, you hosted the Capitol Hill MAHA roundtable that you were discussing. And after that, you said, quote, Secretary Kennedy's goal and my goal would be to use no pesticides. But until we get there, until you give us the technology, he understands that a farmer needs to make a living. You know, so I'm curious, the final report avoided the mention of specific pesticides. But do you think that is that something that you're concerned that the MAHA movement could crack down on in the future?
Well, listen, I think what we've successfully communicated through the 12 farming groups that were represented there is that we are using 60% less chemicals than we were a decade ago, that we can decrease the drift from these fields from 90%. And all that being said, I think that unfortunately our waters do have significant chemicals in them, different chemicals in different places. So we need to target our conservation programs to be better filters. So specifically lining the creeks with more CRP. And while we're doing that, why don't we make it pollinator friendly? And there's other type of buffer systems we can use within row crop agriculture as well. So listen, well, I don't know that we'll ever get to zero chemicals in this world right now, but I think that we understand that we need to get use as least amount possible. By the way, with input costs, why wouldn't we? So I think that more and more, if only 10 or 20% of people are embracing precision agriculture, how do we help move them along in this process? And that means I understand buying expensive equipment. You maybe for a year or two your output goes down. So what do I need to do in DC to help the farmer through those transitions?
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who helped build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable? They'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. The Mohawk Commission's final Make Our Children Healthy Again strategy removed restrictions on whole milk sales in schools. We asked Kansas Senator Roger Marshall about the opportunity that recommendation presents.
So I've been fighting for this for about 5 years. Most of your listeners don't even realize, I think it was back in 2011 that Congress took whole milk out of schools. And because of that, we have a generation of youngsters, now young adults, that never drank milk. They're going to have osteoporosis 10 or 20 years sooner because of that. So not only are we trying to get whole milk back in schools, we're trying to add milk to the healthy choices list and give some type of a reward when we use food stamps that they buy a milk product, whether that's cheese or yogurt. And you can choose your milk. If you want whole milk, great. But I think that's what tastes the best. That's what I was raised on as well. So I'm just tickled pink that the administration, the Maha report acknowledges the importance of whole milk, just like we acknowledge the importance of whole foods as well, as opposed to ultra-processed foods out there.
And I want to get your thoughts. A leader in the Maha movement, Casey Means, has been nominated for Surgeon General. She's a strong critic of widely used pesticides and seed oils. Are you concerned about her nomination? What are your thoughts on her being nominated for that role?
Yeah, I think the jury's still out. I've read several of her books, and I would encourage everybody, if you're really interested, to read some of her books to get the information firsthand from her. I've never met her, never sat down and talked to her either as well. So I'm looking forward to that meeting, and we'll see where that ends up.
And one of the interesting components of the Maha movement has been all the ways it has trickled into states through, SNAP food restriction waivers, preventing the purchase of junk food and soda, and various other state laws. How do you see this Maha movement, changing as we look into the future, and specifically in states across the nation?
Look, one of my signature bills that we hope to have in the Farm Bill is a preemption piece of this, so that we would have consistent standards. So whether you're going, a big issue with Proposition 12 out of California trying to tell Iowa farmers how to grow pigs, right? So we're trying to have preemption where we have one standard by the federal government for ingredients as well. On the other hand, I'm holding the FDA accountable that we want to make sure the ingredients in our food are indeed safe, and we can't rely on science from the 1940s. And so I certainly appreciate FDA picking up that pace, going back and reviewing these ingredients more often. And look, my motto as a doctor is always above all, do no harm. And if we don't know, let's leave it out of there.
And as we wrap up here, there's a lot of uncertainty about the future of international food aid with this administration. Are you confident that programs that have benefited farmers in the past, like Food for Peace, are going to continue at their current levels?
Yeah, I think they will. And I spoke with Secretary Rubio recently about this. I think that many of us agree up here that moving these food programs from the State Department over to USDA, who's already administering some of these, that it makes a lot more sense. You know, unfortunately, there's been so much fraud and abuse in all of our aid programs, including this food, that no one likes that either. So I think that the last thing a farmer back home wants to know is that the food that the federal government paid for and sent overseas, that someone is stealing it and then reselling it as well. So I think it's a good time for us to catch our breath and go back and do that. I think the bigger opportunities in agriculture, though, remain turning, whether it's corn or soybeans or sorghum, turning that into some type of protein like beef, or turning it into biofuels or ethanol. That's where the real opportunities are in American agriculture.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke looks at the crops projected to see the biggest average payment increases from budget reconciliation in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Farmers with cotton, rice, and peanut-based acreage will get the biggest subsidy increases under the changes Congress made to Farm Bill commodity programs through the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That's according to new analysis from the University of Missouri's Food and Agricultural Research Institute. The bill increases reference prices in the price loss program and makes enhancements to the agriculture risk coverage program. This chart shows the average difference in ARC and PLC payments per base acre for commodities in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. As you can see, those average increases are projected to be anywhere from more than 62% for corn all the way up to 222% for rice. It is important to note that the actual payments could be higher or lower depending on what happens with commodity markets. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. This fall, the Supreme Court will take up the legality of the Trump administration's tariffs. We're joined on our panel today by T.A. Hawks with Monument Advocacy and Mike Strands with the National Farmers Union. Harvest is beginning in the southern U.S., and it's still unclear where this year's crop may be sold. To get started, T.A., what's at stake for agriculture in this Supreme Court case?
Yeah, it's a big case. Obviously, the administration will make their arguments before the Supreme Court and try to ensure that the tariffs collected are able to be used in government. And that could be, as we've seen in previous years, done through tariff payments to farmers if they are needed, or they'll be used for other purposes. But I think you're right, their markets are not looking great for commodities today. And I think as harvests come in, and thank goodness the harvest looks good, but it also means that if the prices are lower, it's a bigger impact on farmers. So I think the tariff case has a big impact on what's going to happen this fall for farmers across the U.S.
And talking about, you know, prices, cash prices in North Dakota have fallen lower than the 2018 trade war. Do you think that this sets the stage for Ag Committee leadership to advocate for farm aid payments in the Farm Bill this fall? I mean, what do you think are the prospects for some emergency assistance?
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw in the OBBBA, there was a focus on farmers because prices were already so low. So I think if the economy in the farm economy is continues to decline, then I think leaders of the ag committees and leaders in the House and Senate will try to address that through, whether that's through a CR or through a farm bill, skinny farm bill this fall or early next year. But I think it can't drag on too much longer. I mean, you'll hear probably Mike say through their fly-in, members are hearing directly from farmers. They heard throughout August, and now especially as the harvest begins, people are concerned about the viability of farms, and you're seeing that even through what we understand, some bankruptcies have already been declared across farm country.
And Mike, I want to pull you into the conversation as well. I mean, TA mentioned you've had lots of farmer leaders in town for a fly-in this week. You know, I want to know your thoughts. With so much else on Congress's schedule this fall, how soon can we see action on a farm bill and the prospect for farm aid payments being included?
I think the lights are more than flashing on the dashboard right now. And that was certainly the message when farmers came to town this week through the National Farmers Union fly-in. We've seen the economic indicators all pointing in the wrong direction, with commodity prices down just about 50% in the last few years, farm bankruptcies way up this last year, and all the while corporate monopolies continue to do really well. So I think there is a building amount of momentum pushing towards getting a Farm Bill 2.0 or some additional action done this year. Now, we also want to be very careful when there is some sort of aid provided here because of this trade war situation we're entering, that it's not just a short-term solution. We need to think about the long-term implications of these trade deals or the lack thereof, and how that sort of demand destruction for export markets is going to impact our commodity prices for years going forward. So we want to make sure there's help in the short term, but we need to be mindful when we're opening a farm bill and taking a look at these sorts of programs that we're directing benefit to family farmers and ranchers to make sure the safety net works for them.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. The final Make America Healthy Again Commission report was released this week. We asked Mike Strands with the National Farmers Union for his thoughts on the report.
There was some interesting material in that 18-page MAHA report that covered a lot of ground, certainly on health and vaccines and all sorts of different parts of the American health system, but also on agriculture. And there was a lot of emphasis in that report on local foods. And I think that's a great opportunity for this administration and for Congress to take action to put in place some programs that are lasting and will continue to help out with connecting farmers with local markets. Part of our fly-in this week was talking about the opportunities that are there for Congress to take action on local food procurement bills. And there's a couple of bipartisan efforts out there in the House and the Senate to do just that.
And TA, I want to get your thoughts as well. I mean, broadly, how did the food and ag sector react to this report? And as we look ahead, a futuristic view, how could those recommendations impact broader ag policy decisions and things that impact it, like the dietary guidelines?
Overall, the chairs of the House and Senate Ag Committees put out a positive statement when the report was released the other day. And I think, there's a lot that is yet to be determined. I think there are recommendations, but, many things weren't addressed in a fulsome way. So I think it'll be up for debate. I mean, that's what Congress does. They debate recommendations. Some of the things that the administration has the authority, like dietary guidelines, we could see some changes to what they recommend for Americans. So some administrative action, some legislative action, but there's plenty of ways to interpret the report.
And Mike, I want to get your thoughts. The Agriculture Department has experienced major staff reductions this year and has now extended the comment period for the USDA reorganization until September 30th. You know, I'm curious, do you have concerns about brain drain at the agency? And in your conversations this week, you know, what did you hear from the administration, from the USDA on staffing at the agency, at the department?
Farmers Union members have deep concerns about the brain drain at USDA. And with the loss of 20% of the USDA workforce just this year already, that is going to create a huge hole for future USDA staff to work their way out of. And I think that there needs to be a lot of caution followed in this reorganization effort. We saw what happened when agencies are moved out of DC to different parts of the country. In 2018 and 2019, when the National Institute for Food and Agriculture and the Economic Research Service were moved to Kansas City, we saw huge rates of attrition for how many people left as a result of that. And those roles weren't refilled anytime quickly, ever, really. So I think we're at a point where moving a lot of agencies out of the DC area is going to have a pretty harmful effect on overall staffing levels. And the Farm Safety Net, which we spend so much time talking about as Farmers Union members and as organizations across the country, the Farm Safety Net only works as well as those administering it. And if we keep holding back USDA's ability to move forward and implement these programs, it's going to have an effect.
And TA, as we wrap up, I want to get your thoughts as well. I mean, with all the staff reductions and reorganization, are you concerned about brain drain at USDA?
Yeah, I think the biggest concern is, you know, these are farmer-focused programs that are in many ways, hampered if a lot of people are taking voluntary buyouts or having reductions in staff. And I think that's why you saw after the initial announcement of the removal of folks to different parts of the country, the Senate Ag Committee under Chairman Bozeman and Ranking Member Klobuchar had a quick hearing with the Deputy Secretary just to examine what the impacts could be. So I think plenty of people on the Hill are paying attention and want to make sure that farmers and landowners and ranchers have the resources available to them in the profession and staffing that, you know, they've become accustomed to in the county offices and even in the state offices. So I think there are plenty of ways that folks on the Hill and in DC are paying attention and want to make sure that the impacts aren't overly burdensome on farmers and ranchers. And I think that's part of the reason why you saw the comment period extended.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Haneke looks at the number of employees by state that have left the Interior Department through a deferred resignation program in this week's Map It Out.
Nearly 6,900 employees have left the Interior Department due to downsizing, according to data obtained by AgriPulse through a Freedom of Information Act request. That amounts to roughly 9.9% of the agency's overall workforce when paired with the Office of Personnel Management stats from this time last year. This map shows the number of employees that have left the Interior Department by state through one of the two deferred resignation programs offered by the Trump administration. The National Park Service has lost over 1,000 employees, and three other offices, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the U.S. Geological Survey, and the Bureau of Reclamation, have lost more than 900. It is important to note that this only includes those who left voluntarily. It does not include the number of employees who have left without participating in a DRP, which means there are even more losses the department has sustained this year. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Haneke.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Next week, both the House and Senate will be in session. And there's still time to register for the Kansas City Ag Outlook Forum. You won't want to miss conversations with Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Vaden, USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer, and other ag leaders on September 25th. Tune in next week and check our website anytime for the latest developments in all things food, farm, and fuel policy. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.